started. It's a few minutes after 5 on the East Coast. And I thought we'd get started on time. We're going to try to keep it fairly tight in terms of the agenda as well as the schedule. We have a number of issues to bring up to speed on, as well as a relatively robust discussion on some of the issues that have been pressing for each of you as you ask questions in the portal and elsewhere. So thank you for joining this town hall. This is the first town hall of the post-confirmation period by the liquidation trust. The committee is disbanded pursuant to the bankruptcy confirmation order entered in August. That order approved the plan that was confirmed by the court overwhelmingly by the vote of the investors and creditors. And that order disbanded the creditors committee. So despite the fact that the Omni website calls this the creditors committee town hall, that'll be corrected. It's in actuality the first town hall of the liquidation trust for purposes of the post-plan period. So now we are outside of bankruptcy in terms of Chapter 11. We're continuing in a post-confirmation period. The bankruptcy court retains jurisdiction, of course, to hear any number of issues pursuant to the plan. But let me start with introductions. So I am Louis DeLucia of Ice Miller, for those of you who have not participated before. I am one of the lead attorneys for the trust, and with me on the video and on the phone is my colleague Michael Ott, who will also be discussing some of the issues today on our agenda. But also, and most importantly, we have on the call the representative of the liquidation trustee, who is Matthew Ward. He will also be participating in the call today. He is on the call. And we also have the CEO of the wind down entities, which is Rick Budd, also on the call today. He will be addressing some of the real estate issues. We have the CFO, Tommy Fierro of the wind down entities, as well as some of the additional professional advisors, including Alvarez and Marcel, Andrea Gonzalez, Bill Waldy, and others who are on this call. And we will be addressing an agenda that will include the following. First, we'll be discussing some of the tax filing and tax issues that have been raised by some of the investors and creditors who've asked questions. So Eisner Amper, who is providing tax advisory work, is on as well. We have, as I mentioned, a discussion regarding the real estate and an update on the real estate. Rick Budd will be providing some of that update. We'll provide an update on the investigation and litigation. That will be by myself, as well as Bill Waldy and Andrea and Mike and others who wish to participate in terms of a summary there. We'll also provide a discussion of the claims reconciliation and objections process that will be engaged in post-confirmation, as we'll be doing through the trust. And then, of course, we'll answer some of the questions that we've seen and been posed to the portal and elsewhere. And then we'll have some open discussion about the next town hall, etc. So with that, I don't know, Matthew, if you'd like to, as the representative of the liquidation trustee, make any type of introductory comments, you're welcome to do so.
Thank you, Louis. Can people hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, thank you for that introduction. I was on the last town hall, which was pre-confirmation of the plan, but that was a chance to get involved on these town halls and see how they work. And I'll be attending these going forward and look forward to working hard for all of the investors on the call to maximize recovery and achieve the best outcome given this unfortunate situation as I can, working with the Alvarez and the Ice Miller team. Addressing any issues that you guys have as they arise. Thanks, Louis.
You bet. Thank you, Matthew. So structurally, for those who may not recall, I'm going to give you a quick structure of the entity that we're talking about and how it's working post confirmation, and then we're going to jump into the tax issue. So just for refresher, once the plan was confirmed, which was done in August, like I mentioned, and became effective August 25th, 2023, A trust was created, and that's the AIRN Liquidation Trust. The trust is essentially run by the AIRN Liquidation Trust Co. LLC. Matthew is the representative of that entity. Operating below that are the operating entities that will be running the properties for purposes of development, sale, and liquidation for the benefit of all of you. That's AIRN Holding Co. LLC and AIRN Management Co. LLC. And Rick Budd and Tommy Fierro, who are on this call, are representatives of those companies and will address some of the operating real estate, some of the tax issues, et cetera, for your benefit. So with that, let's jump into the tax issues, and I will pass the baton to Ken Weisenberg from Eisner Amper, who's on the call, I believe, as well as Tommy, if he wishes to jump in, on some of the questions that we've received regarding the K-1s and other tax issues. Again, I'll do a caveat. I'll save you a little bit of a caveat there, Ken. None of the professionals or any representatives of the trustee or the operating entities, wind down entities, I should say, are going to be giving you individual tax advice. Your individual tax advice is going to be provided by whomever you seek individual tax advice from. This is a general discussion regarding tax status and related issues. So Ken and Tommy, I pass it to you.
Yep. Hi, everyone. So this is Tommy Fierro. I'm going to start off, give some procedurally what's going on with the tax returns and answer a lot of the recurring questions we've seen from, you know, from you folks over the past, you know, couple weeks as the K-1s have been prepared and beginning to be distributed. And then Ken will chime in on some of the more technical aspects, again, subject to Lou's caveat that we're unable to provide individualized tax advice. So collectively, you know, all the professionals on the phone, we spent a significant amount of time reviewing the feedback from you guys, really in conjunction with the preparation of the investor schedule that was filed with the bankruptcy plan. A lot of folks reached out to Ice Miller, to Alvarez, directly to the NRIA channels, and we've kind of worked in conjunction to come up with what we felt was the most accurate representation of investor amounts owed as of really the filing of the bankruptcy plan, and kind of then had to take those numbers that are published on the investor schedule and work into, you know, that's really your cash balance into the company, and we have to translate that into what the tax basis is that gets reported on your K-1s. A lot of the questions that we've been seeing relate to, you know, this, the beginning balance on my 2022 K-1 doesn't match the ending balance on my 2021 K-1. And, you know, the reason for that is based on the extensive amount of investors and changes that we were making in connection with the feedback from everyone, we have the confidence in the amounts of the investor balances as of the end date, and are still working through a list of discrepancies to basically restore those amounts back to what the ending balances would have been in retrospective years, so that all of the K-1s flow through properly and will match the preceding years. So unfortunately, the 2021 amendment will not be finalized prior to October 15th. However, this has no impact on your 2022 filing. Any adjustments relating to the amended returns will be treated as adjustments to your income in the year the amended returns are filed. And we are hoping and targeting to have the amended returns for both 2021 and 2022 filed by the end of this year in the next couple months. Really, some of the issues that would be borne out here are certain investors have, you know, an allocation of their capital that may have been erroneously categorized. As an example, you know, John Doe as an individual may have had part of his investment or subsequent repayment of that investment categorized towards John Doe's Roth IRA account or John Doe's traditional IRA account. So those are just some of the small nuances that we're going back and correcting. However, we have to do that on an annual basis retroactively to determine what the loss allocation and other income and deduction allocations would be per year, which is just a very time-consuming project. So a handful of investors have reached out and said, hey, you don't have my red address on file. Please issue me a new K-1. These changes are being tracked. They will be implemented with the issuance of the amended K-1s. However, just want to kind of stress that this is not something that we can, you know, manually modify, enter, and print out a new K-1. It has to be something that's handled in connection with an amended tax return. So that's, you know, those changes are being tracked to the extent that you've submitted a request. And that will be ready with the distribution of the amended K-1s. You know, as we go back to the reallocation of capital to the prior years, some of these amounts are going to change the allocation to each investor. Again, whether that's an income or a deduction allocation, and that's all going to flow through. Many investors have asked, you know, I want the breakdown by year. What is this deduction versus another deduction? And that's something that will all be borne out, you know, with the amended K-1s.
It's Ken Weisenberg, from a partner at Eisner Amper, who has prepared the return 21 and 22. If you did not receive a K-1, please reach out to the company. All of the K-1s were issued. They were mailed. They were sent by Omni Solutions. You can try checking your spam folder if you did not receive the email from Omni in your regular folder. But the K-1s have all been issued. There are significant adjustments to capital, both for the 2021 and potentially for 2022 as well. So if you are not happy with your capital account, it will be changed as a result of the amended returns. The capital account has no significant tax effect in most cases. The impact of it is that losses were allocated based on remaining capital in the fund. So if you had $100,000 of capital in the fund and the fund had $200 million of overall capital, you had $100,000 over $200 million to get your percentage of losses. If it turns out your actual capital account should have been $150,000 and the capital account of the fund overall should have been $250 million, and it would be $150,000 over $250 million. So those percentages might change a little bit. To the extent it results in a change of income or loss to an investor, you will receive a statement resulting from the amended returns, which will be included in your 2023, if we issue them in 23, or 24, if we issue them in 24 tax returns. To the extent that you have your interest through another partnership, that partnership has to push out that adjustment to the partners, so that they can make the adjustment in the appropriate returns.
Thanks, Ken.
In terms of the line items on the K-1 that really do impact your taxes, there's basically two lines on the K-1s that impact your taxes. One is line one, ordinary business income, which should be reported on your federal Schedule E and Form 8252. These are subject to passive loss limitations. And the other is a theft loss, which was reported on line 13. That loss should be reported on form 4684, line 20. We're treating it as a loss from a Ponzi scheme that's deductible in the year of discovery. That's the indictments came down against the principals of the fund.
I just have you know, two more categorical points to discuss. Generally speaking, on the capital summary on your K-1, you'll see two forms of actual distributions. One would be a cash distribution, which is going to reflect what many of you know as the monthly return of capital payments that were made to you through May of 2022, right up until the bankruptcy was filed. And then the second line, property distributions, to the extent that you see that on your K-1, that's going to reflect the deduction of any rollover bonuses or any other non-cash interests that were provided in the fund that were deemed to be disallowed in accordance with the terms of the plan. And finally, to the extent that you're an investor in one of the single address LLC, or, you know, commonly referred to as the pre-fund properties, you should have received a final K-1 in 2021 from that entity, meaning you won't receive one for 2022. And to the extent that you still maintain the positive capital account balance in one of those pre-fund properties, that balance was transferred to the fund, and you should have received a K-1 from the fund in 2022 with respect to that transaction. And that covers, you know, our overview of the tax aspects. So Lou, I think, unless you have any other
questions. I'm going to address some of the other questions that are popping up in the Q&A.
That'd be great.
Sure.
Okay. So if you're taking a position under Revenue Proc 2009-20, which is basically deducting Ponzi scheme losses as an investor, you don't take into account what's on the K-1s. You look solely to what your cash investment into the scheme was, less actual cash distributions you received, to look at what your net amount invested is. And you take, you know, you use that for your loss, and you ignore the K-1s, and you have to file a form saying you're ignoring the K-1. Consult that with your tax advisor. You will need a 2023 K-1. You'll be actually receiving two K-1s in kind of like three K-1s in 2023. The first is for the fund through August 25th, when it ceased to exist. The second would be for a partnership owned by the liquidating trust, which holds the properties. And the third would be a grantor trust letter from the liquidating trust. And that would be from August 26th through the end of the year for those last two items. So you'll be receiving three pieces of paper that you have to include in your tax returns for 23, or if you took the Ponzi scheme loss, that you don't include. We are reviewing the allocation of losses for both 21 and 22 based on the revisions to capital and the timing of capital. So the numbers may definitely change, and it will, you know, basically be part of the amended returns, which you'll get a statement. And I think that covers most of the questions, or the gist of most of the questions.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for that, both of you. So that's the tax filing information. By the way, just to refresh everyone's recollection from the past town halls, for those who have participated in the past, we have these recorded, and they are posted. Each of these town halls are recorded and posted on the Omni website. They will continue to be to do to. We will continue to do so. On top of that, there is on that website a schedule of the liquidation trust town halls. It's at docket number 3747, if you want to see it. There's a full schedule there of the town halls. The next one will, in fact, be December 12th, 2023. And it is every 2 months now under the schedule adopted by the liquidation trust and the plan as provided. So every 2 months, there'll be one of these with an update. So that is the report on the tax and answering hopefully most of the global questions. We'll turn now to the real estate update, which Rick Budd, who is CEO of the Wind Down Entities, will be providing. Rick, I'll turn it over to you. Rick, we can't hear you, so I don't know if you're muted.
Better, right?
Yep, gotcha.
Thank you. Thanks, Lewis.
No problem.
Good evening, everybody. So I won't go through all the specific assets, but I will, you know, provide, you know, updates for you on where we are. It continues to be a very challenging market. Everybody is well aware of the interest rates. You get inundated with discussion about them, and they truly are having an impact on financing, and the financing impacts buyers. Nevertheless, we're continuing to be very active marketing the properties. In some cases, we are still completing properties. We also are seeking approvals where we don't have approvals. So everything is moving at the same pace that we had forecast. We do have 6 properties under contract for approximately $26 million. We're hopeful of having those closed before the end of the year and possibly even in November, if possible. So, but it's still a precarious market. I mean, we had another contract for an additional $4 million, which we lost because of some environmental issues, but we hope to get that even back and reinstated, but that'll be probably more towards the latter part or probably in 2024. But you know, we're active in the market. We are seeing a little more activity in the last couple of weeks, and particularly once we've exited bankruptcy. The bankruptcy creates many obstacles, creates a good forum sometimes to complete a sale, but buyers are very leery of getting involved in the bankruptcy process. It costs them extra money. They have to hire bankruptcy counsel, et cetera. So I think that the trust aspect will be beneficial to us as we continue to move forward and hopefully move the products or move the projects in an orderly fashion. So we're not fire selling things, to reiterate what we've discussed before. We will, you know, hopefully get our prices. We'll be patient on your behalf. And that's where we are. I'm always happy to answer questions from parties if something comes up, you know, through Lois or whatever, and to provide you additional information. Thanks, Lois.
All right, thanks, Rick. I think you know, one question is how soon and what the timeline is for real estate sales and distributions for dollars to investors, I assume from the real estate. I think you answered that, but I'll just add some color to it, which is obviously the market and the conditions for sales and the development of the properties is fluid, but every effort's being made to do so as soon as possible to the best possible way for maximizing recovery. It is an active process. There are sales coming up, as Rick said, and we anticipate some revenue from those sales in the near future, but and then ultimately the trustee will make a decision as to when and if distributions can be made. But that's tied a little bit to the investigation and litigation piece, which we'll now turn to, because of at least one or two issues related to the investigation. Both I and others from the Ice Miller team, as well as Alvarez, and I'm not sure if Rick Barry's on, but the investigators will share insight on this. The investigation and litigation, if you want to consider the case as a global case, you've got the real estate piece, which Rick just addressed, as well as what you've all been aware of, because that's what you originally invested in. And then you've got now the litigation piece. The litigation piece and investigation has been going on during the bankruptcy. For those of you who stayed with us and listened through the town halls, you know we've been investigating. We had no authority, with the exception of the litigation we began against S3, to commence any litigation against any third parties under the law until we were given standing, it's called, which now the liquidation trustee has. But prior to August 25th, the debtors had the standing or authority to sue individuals. They did so. They commenced certain litigations against Grabato, against Elzano, against a few other folks for certain more limited claims. We were investigating the bigger claims and have amassed a very substantial body of information against a number of particular buckets and targets. We've talked about them in the past. We've talked about certain financial institutions we're investigating, advertising, marketing, and reputation management individuals and entities, insider payments to insiders and affiliates, family members, feeder funds, construction companies, all of whom we have literally millions of documents. We have done countless interviews, and will be doing additional depositions and then teeing up some litigation in short order. But let me start with this. Now that we have the standing to sue, and will in fact within the next 30 days or so be filing 2 major litigations, at least, those claims are going to be for literally the entire body of these of unpaid investors. But because of that, we have to be very careful, because they could be listening to this call. The defendants who we are going to be suing could be listening. And we therefore have to be very careful about what we say and how we say it. So if we don't give you the information or granular detail regarding particular claims, it's not because A, the work wasn't done, or B, because we don't have valid claims we haven't identified, or C, haven't been able to parse through the information. All of that is in process. All of that's being worked on by a team of lawyers and financial advisors and investigators. And we have material claims to be brought against a number of people and individuals. I can talk about some. So let's talk about one. USC, US Construction, which has morphed into US Development. I can talk about that to some degree, not all the claims we anticipate bringing, which are going to be substantial. That entity is being sued by the debt, sued initially by the debtors. We're going to be bringing additional claims. I said it at the confirmation hearing. We anticipate bringing claims against them. The reason why they're important is they filed a proof of claim for $50 million. They are an entity run by, as you know, Dustin Salzano and John Farina. Dustin Salzano is Nick Salzano's son. He's been deposed in this case. You've seen some of our pleadings. If you haven't, let me know. We can point you to certain pleadings which really lay out what we believe to be their relationship to the securities fraud here, which we believe is substantial. So that is one major target and entity that we are looking at. I'm not going to get into other tactics that we're employing as to these entities. But I can tell you that financial institutions are a focal point of our investigation. Professionals are also certain financial advisors and accountants to the company prior to the bankruptcy, as well as law firms, all of which are being focused on. And what I mean by focused on is that we've already obtained substantial documents, have already poured through them, have already developed claims. We have charts of the causes of action. We have draft complaints as to various entities. We have mature complaints to be filed within the next 30 days as to certain other entities. There will be a cascade of lawsuits in the next couple of few months that will, through the fourth quarter of 2023, start shaping up what we believe to be the body of litigation against the prospective defendants. The recovery we hope will be substantial, material, and hopefully comparable, if not greater than the real estate recovery. We don't know that for sure because litigation is always uncertain. You get a judge, you get a jury, you never know how that's gonna come out, but we always believe that our claims are going to be successful. So generally speaking, I'm going to leave it at that because we're so close to the commencement of litigation. I don't want to give people who may be listening ideas that they shouldn't have. So other than that, I'll turn it to you, Bill, from Alvarez, if you wish to supplement in any particular granularity the issues we've been discussing.
Yeah, thanks, Lewis. Yeah, keeping it at a high level, I think you covered pretty much everything as far as going through the buckets and so forth. Just to know that we are working closely with the Ice Miller team, doing complex financial analysis, tracing the money, not only the 130 bank accounts that the debtors had, but the dozens of other bank accounts that we've identified through subpoena, the 100+ subpoenas that are out there as those documents come in. More than 6 million documents have been gone through already. We just received another 1 million documents in a critical time period that are currently being uploaded now for review, which will be, you know, keyword searched and so forth to supplement the complaints and motions that are being filed. again, you know, our big focus right now is not only the tracing of the funds, it's the litigation support, providing sworn declarations when needed, helping with the motions, the complaint, and putting together the numbers behind that, helping build out deposition questions and identifying targets. But I really, there's at a high level, that's what we have going. I think Lewis did a great job of describing it, you know, in a nutshell without getting too granular for the reasons he explained. That's all I got, Lewis.
Thanks, Bill. All right, with that, I think we'll turn to claims reconciliation and objections, which essentially will be a process that is ordinarily and always done post-confirmation, if not 90% of the time. And I'll turn that to Michael Ott from ICE Miller and Andrew Gonzalez, A&M.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. In terms of the claims reconciliation process, I'm going to divide this into two different sets of investors. We have the contributing investors under the plan. Basically, that's the vast majority of investors. Those are all the investors that didn't opt out of the settlement of the plan and were not listed as excluded parties and did not file an objection to the plan. For those investors, the next step that we are taking is we are preparing what is called an omnibus objection to all of the claims that were filed by those investors. Now, what that does is it just takes all the claims, all the duplicative claims, all the amended claims, and it cleans up the claims register so that for each contributing investor, we will have one line item, which is their investment, their net investment amount, which is the amount that was listed on the investor schedule that was filed, that was attached to the plan. If you look at the order confirming the plan, which also attaches the plan itself, the investor schedule is attached to that. We are working, you know, a number of investors have reached out with respect to the issue that Tommy raised earlier on this call, which is, you know, allocation issues. For example, many investors have claims individually, claims, you know, maybe jointly with a spouse, and then a claim with an IRA and a claim with a Roth IRA. They can have multiple different claims. And some investors have had issues with the allocation of their claims between those individual entries, which can have tax consequences, obviously, if a claim that should be part of an IRA is allocated to the individual specifically. So if that is an issue, if you've looked at the investor schedule, you have multiple claims and you don't agree with the allocation, please reach out to us so we can get that resolved. So that is the first step. So we're working with Omni to get that list of investors together. We've gotten that list of investors, and we're working to basically prepare the filing that will clean up the docket and allow those claims so that there's nothing more that contributing investors would need to do at that stage in order to receive distributions once they are commenced. If you've looked at the investor schedule and you agree with the amount that is listed on there, you do not need to contact us. Obviously, we love to hear from you, but you don't need to contact us if you agree with the amount. So that will, things should move forward as they are. The amount will not change for you from what it was previously. If there is going to be a change to your amount, we will reach out to you, but that is not going to happen for the vast majority of investors. So that is the first part. The next part of it is the non-contributing investors and the excluded parties. Anybody who opted out of the plan after we file this first claim objection will be analyzing and preparing a claim objection with respect to all the non-contributing investors and the excluded parties to object to the claims that they filed and set forth what we believe the appropriate amount of their claim is. Once that is filed, and again, that won't come until after the first objection. Once that is filed, if your name is on that list, then review the pleading. If you actually agree with the amount that we're setting forth on the schedule, then you won't need to do anything. If you disagree with the amount that's set forth in the schedule, there's an opportunity for you to reach out and we will discuss what the appropriate amount of your claim is and we'll get that resolved. If you do not reach out after that, though, the order will presumably eventually be entered and the claim will be allowed in the amount set forth on that order. So again, if you are a non-contributing investor, there's a little bit of a pause while we're dealing with the contributing investors, but then, you know, there will be an objection filed in the near future to get those claim amounts set at the appropriate level as well. Excluded parties under the plan are basically included on a list for the most part, the list is made up of insiders, the debtor, the Gravatos and Salzanos of the world. It also includes a number of investors who had relationships with the debtor in terms of, some sort of, commission agreement or referral agreements in terms of bringing in investors who received kind of non-standard distributions from the debtor prior to the bankruptcy filing. That is basically why most of the investors ended up on the excluded party list. There are also investors on the excluded party list who are there because they received essentially all of their cash back prior to the bankruptcy case. And that was just to make sure that they didn't get any releases from any sort of clawback actions that those investors, who I believe we consider effectively the net winners, to make sure that their claims, that the estate's claims against them to return some of the cash that they received are preserved. If you are on the excluded parties list and you haven't reached out yet and you would like to reach out to determine why you ended up there, please do. And we will, we can talk about, how you ended up there, whether or not it's appropriate for you to be on that list and how we can get that resolved. So that is all I have in terms of the claims reconciliation process. Andrea, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Sure. The only other thing I wanted to speak to is Michael was focusing on the investor claims prior to, the investor claims being hit out or a distribution. There's a number of other classes that require review. So just as a general background, there's about 10,000 claims that were filed. We're working with Omni to remove the duplicates of any amended claims so that we can get the smaller population, and then the reconciliation that Mike was and the objections he was referring to will help us narrow down that list so we can focus on that. So once we are able to get through the prior claims, we'll be focusing on as well in the continued process of looking at the investor claims. So it's just want to have everyone aware that it is a timely process given the number of claims. We're being as efficient as possible by using Omni and others to remove any duplicates. So that's kind of the broader update from the claims process.
And I see one question I want to respond to about excluded parties. Just because you're an excluded party does not mean you won't have a claim at the end of the day. An excluded party was included under the plan just to make sure you didn't get a release of any claims that the debtors had against you. So if you're listed as an excluded party, that means your claim is disputed, meaning we might disagree about the amount or we think there are defenses that we have, but it doesn't mean that your claim is disallowed, meaning you're not getting anything. It might mean after we resolve all the defenses, it might mean that we believe you shouldn't be getting anything, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. So if you're listed as an excluded party and you believe you're still owed a substantial amount of money from the debtors, it's quite possible that you will have a claim as an investor for the amounts that are properly due. But we need to resolve that and get that worked out. We included excluded parties because those were the investors we weren't in agreement with, or we didn't think we were in agreement with on the amount of their claims. So it doesn't mean you're out of luck. It doesn't mean you're not getting anything. It just means that we need time to resolve that and work that out with you to figure out how much you will be getting. I think that
Mike, let me add one thing about the excluded parties. There are some excluded parties who may be an investor against whom the estate may have claims who may not eventually become a legitimate holder of a claim. So that is a potential. We don't, that is based upon individual specific facts. As Mike pointed out, many investors who are on the list may not remain excluded. They may ultimately get a permitted claim, a claim that may be asserted against the estate. But there are also some against whom the estate has claims, anticipates bringing claims, and challenging their entitlement to being an investor. So there are some people and some entities on that list that fall into that bucket. Right, anything else on the claims issues?
Just one more thing. The investor schedule is available. It's attached to the order confirming the plan, which if you give me 1 second here, I'll tell you what that docket number is. So you can go right to it. So if you look at docket 3599, that's the bankruptcy court's order confirming the plan, and that attaches to it a copy of the final plan. And then attached to the final plan is the excluded party list. Exhibit 2 is the excluded party list, and exhibit 3 is the investor schedule, which lists those amounts. So that's where you can find that.
All right. Thanks. Now let's move on to the questions that were put into the portal. And we'll also try, to the best of our abilities, those non-repeat questions in the Q&A side part of this. All right, so let's start with the first questions. I think we answered some of the tax questions, so we won't go over those. I think those were answered through the tax discussion. Next is the IRA custodian questions. We put these questions, if you wish, into categories. Mike, if you have the update, you know, chance to go through those.
So if you want to switch, if you have an IRA custodian that you're not happy with and you would like to switch to another IRA custodian, what you need to do is you need to first go to that IRA custodian and ask them for the paperwork you need in order to transfer your IRA to another custodian. And you need to get the paperwork from your new custodian and make sure you have all that. Once you've worked out all that paperwork between those two entities, so you've done everything that they require for you to transfer from the first custodian to the new custodian, then send us the completed paperwork so that we can reflect that on the books and records so that the payments go to the right party. If you have specific issues with your specific claim and your IRA custodian in terms of whether you can transfer it or what, we can't really help with that because we represent the trust. We don't represent you individually. So you're going to need to work out with them what you can do there. But again, you need to use their paperwork to make sure you're transferring it effectively from the old custodian to the new custodian, and then send us notice of the transfer so that we have that record. So there was a question. I previously said that, you know, if you have a mix of IRA and non-IRA funds, you should contact me. Again, the reason why I suggest you contact me is if you looked at the investor schedule and you do not agree with the allocation among your various claims. So if you have a personal claim, IRA claim, and Roth IRA claim, and you don't agree with the way that your investments are allocated between those three claims, then you should reach out to us. If you are in agreement with the allocation, you do not need to reach out with us. You don't need to reach out to us just because you have an IRA. It's just if you disagree with the allocation. Can I retire this asset to my existing IRA custodian to have the trustees send me any distributions in cash? I do not know the answer to that. I think that's a tax question in terms of what the tax consequences of that are. I would consult with your accountant and consult with your individual attorney as to whether or not you can take those distributions. And if this is an issue that that you've worked through with your own accountant and your own attorney and they tell you can, then we can talk through how to make that change on the books. But please don't come to us with that unless you've actually consulted with your professionals first and they've told you that it's okay, because we won't be able to help you until we know that works. I have reason to believe that my IRA custodian may have illegally complied and or conspired with NRIA to accept altered/substituted contracts. If you have information or evidence that your IRA custodian had improper communications or correspondence or improper dealings with the debtors, please forward that evidence and that information along to us, and we'd be happy to take a look at it. As Lewis mentioned before, we are turning over every rock and we are looking at every party that effectively touched NRIA to assess whether or not the estate has potential claims against them. And so any information you have that points to a claim would be helpful. But if you just have your suspicions, while we appreciate that, and we without any sort of documentary evidence or anything like that, it's going to be hard for us to go on that. So we need a little bit more than that. So again, if you have documentary evidence to support any concerns you have, please forward that along and we will definitely take a look. That's the IRA custodian questions. Lewis, I'll pass it to you on the case timeline and distributions.
Thank you. So a number of really just essentially duplicative questions were asked about when the first distribution will occur, what percentage, et cetera. I think in part we've answered that indirectly through a number of the discussion, but we don't have a specific date for distribution for a number of reasons. One is, we do have some cash on hand, but those sales of real estate are proceeding. There is the overarching obligation by us to get the $50 million proof of claim, which is an unsecured claim, which comes ahead on distribution under the plan of USC, US Construction, dealt with by the bankruptcy court. That will be, as I mentioned, something being addressed this month. And so we will wait to see what happens with the bankruptcy court, but in that will be a very substantial motion slash litigation to be filed, like I mentioned, and it will be addressed by the court. It will not likely be resolved in the early part of 2023, at least not to a point, I should say, in this last quarter, to a point where we'll be able to make a distribution in 2023, especially since additional cash from the real estate closings will be coming in. I would anticipate 2024 to be a year in which we hope distributions will be made. Obviously, every effort is being made by the trustee, by the CEO, by others to get this distribution out to you as soon as possible. There is some hope that the litigation will generate some quick recoveries as well. We have some additional claims against entities, including accounting firms, et cetera, that might generate some quick recoveries. If they come in and if we're able to knock out the 50 million as soon as possible, we will speak to the trustee about making, even if it's a small initial distribution, an initial distribution as soon as possible. But and obviously, the minute we get access to when that money can go out, we will immediately get that done. So with the trustee and with the advisory board's blessing. So that's the best we can answer on that question. Next, I'll turn to discrepancies with investor schedule. Mike and Andrea, perhaps we've already discussed that.
Yeah, so we had a couple of questions about specific discrepancies that the individual investors have. I've noted those, we've noted those. I will look through our records. I'll confer with Tommy on that and with Andrea. About the records that we have, and I'll get back to you in terms of, you know, whether we agree or not, and you know, in terms what we think your claim should be, and where maybe the discrepancy is.
All right. The next question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, trust expenses, right?
Yep.
So one is, what is the approximate or average savings of the monthly burn between the rate pre-plan acceptance and post-plan acceptance? I think essentially what I understand that to be is, what's the burn of carrying the trust versus the debtors comparatively? We just got this question yesterday. We haven't done that comparative analysis in terms of pure numbers, but I can tell you that here's who is no longer feeding from the trough of this estate. We have no board. Were being paid. We had 3 board members. You remember, they're not being paid anymore. They had board counsel. They're not being paid anymore. We had debtors counsel, which included 3 firms, Sills Cummins, Riker Danzig, Pashman Stein. They're not being paid anymore. We have no US trustee fees going out anymore. So the while the calculus can and could be done, it is significantly reduced, if not overwhelmingly reduced, and streamlined to be very much efficient towards focusing on real estate disposition, sale and disposition, and litigation. Largely done by Ice Miller with Alvarez and Marcel and Rick Barry's firm, and then the trustee, of course, and the wind down entity staff, which is very, very lean. So with that, it's an extremely lean machine that we hope will be able to effectively, and that's why we wanted to get out of bankruptcy as soon as possible. I mean, you saw many professionals were taking monthly fee distributions. It's now reduced completely. And we are going to hopefully now focus on, with the standing we have, pursue those litigations as effectively as we can under the guidance from the liquidation trustee and get this recovery to you. So that's what that has done. Next is the criminal proceedings. Are any bad actors, have any pled guilty or are they arrested? And that's the only question in that area. Generally speaking, there are 2 criminal proceedings pending. One is against Salzano. One is against Scaturo. They are USA versus Salzano in New Jersey District Court, criminal action 22-690. And then against USA versus Scaturo. That's Arthur Scaturo. S-C-U-T-T-A-R-O on that action. That's the father. There's another Arthur Scuturo, the junior. That's criminal action 22-692. As to Salzano, he has obviously a criminal complaint pending against him. There are 18 counts, including, of course, securities fraud, et cetera, against him, a 43-page indictment with three separate conspiracy charges. There's a trial on March 5th, 2024 for criminal charges against Salzano. Because of that action and others, they also stayed. The government has stayed the civil action, the fraternado, I can't pronounce the person's name, the individual civil action against a number of these individuals because of the fact that testimony could impair the criminal action. So that has been stayed, but that action is proceeding against Salzano. I believe he is in house arrest of some sort with $1 million appearance bond collateralized by a pledge of Peter Salzano, his brother's residence, which I think, or property, may not be his residence, but property at 11 Cedar Crest Drive in Toms River. So, and that is on the docket. Also in Scuturo, he pled. However, there was an information filed on October 13th, 2022. He filed a plea agreement for conspiracy to commit securities fraud. That's a docket number 5 of that docket. And nothing else has happened that I've seen in that case as to Grabato or O'Brien by the DOJ, but we will keep you posted. Claims questions, I think we answered those, right, Mike, in terms of I have an amount for my claim. Am I still required to submit a new claim, other entities? But yeah. If you want to address Mike for
yeah, so if you don't, the claims process is concluded. You don't need to submit any more claims, any new claims or anything like that. At this point, if you submit a new claim, we're just going to have to add it to our objection list. It's just going to create more work and not going to help us. So, you know, there's nothing you need to do there. Again, you don't need to confirm your claim amounts. If you agree with the amounts that are listed on the investor schedule, then you don't need to do anything at this point. So that's those questions. We did also receive I did receive a direct question via email asking if there's a rough projection on how much might be salvaged from sales on real estate. Again, if you look back at the disclosure statement that was filed in this case, the first exhibit to the disclosure statement was the liquidation analysis. The liquidation and the disclosure statement itself contains a description of all the properties. Liquidation analysis contains the projections of how much we believe the real estate will sell for. At the time, we believed that the real estate would generate enough proceeds to hopefully get us to between 25 and 35%. That was a projection. I don't know exactly where we are in terms of that projection right now, but I believe we're not too far off from it. It was a long-term projection. So that's still what we have in mind in terms of the recovery from the real estate portion alone. And then any recovery on the litigation that we pursue would be on top of that 25 to 35 hopeful % from the real estate. Then there are some questions about the excluded party list, but we've already covered those. So do you want to just try and go through the Q&A here and see if there's anything we haven't answered?
Sure.
Okay. It makes sense to sue the SEC. Don't they have a deep pocket? Lewis, I'll let you handle that.
One, it's never great advice to sue the SEC, but separate and apart from that is that they probably have sovereign immunity or protection against being sued as a governmental agency, and except under very rare and limited circumstances. This certainly would not be one of them, but it's certainly something we could look at. But our view is that that is not necessarily a avenue in this particular case. It's not that the SEC was not visiting their offices, doing inspections. This was a failure of the individuals running this company to report, to comply with applicable state and federal securities laws and other wrongful acts, many wrongful acts. Not sure the SEC can be pinned for that, but go ahead. Next question.
Most of them, I believe we've already answered. I'm just trying to scroll through, see if there are any.
Yeah.
That we haven't. It can say the Ponzi loss should be filed in 2022. So you should review with your accountant the theft loss deduction statute. We again can't give you individual legal advice, and we aren't tax professionals. So please, you know, don't pay attention to what we say on taxes because that's not our area of expertise, and we can't give you individual advice anyway. My understanding, again, with a grain of salt, is that the indictment should probably be enough in order to declare a theft loss with respect to the Ponzi scheme. The indictment against Grabato and Salzana was filed in October of 2022, as Lewis mentioned. So I believe, again, confirm with your accountant, that 2022 is probably the loss year. But that's as far as my knowledge goes on that.
Yeah, I would talk to your individual tax advisor. We do know that Salzano was arrested in March of 2021 and charged in 2021 for actions in connection with TD Bank while at the company. We do know a whistleblower published an article in the fall of 2021 by an article. He didn't publish an article, but there was an article in the Star Ledger and in a Philadelphia newspaper in late 2021. Allegedly blowing the whistle on the securities fraud that he believed occurred at the company. Don't know how that impacts your tax situation. Speak to your tax advisor on that and whether or not that would help you. So
There's a question: who will the eventual distributions be sent to, directly to investor or law firms that filed claims on their behalf? So on the proof of claim form, there was a there are two addresses that you could include there. One is where notices should be sent, and two is where payments should be sent. Omni should be sending payments ultimately, or Omni, I don't believe we'll be sending payments, but when we send payments, they should go to the address that was listed on that form for where payments should be directed. If you directed that that payments should be sent to the law firm, that's where they would go. Otherwise, they would go to whatever address you put on there, but they won't go to the law firm just because the law firm filed the proof of claim, if that's what happened. Question: is any provision going to be made for those of us who invested last, therefore we recovered only a small fraction of our original investment? Unfortunately, no, there is no provision made for when somebody invested. The recovery is basically to equalize effectively the distributions that investors are receiving out of the bankruptcy estate, whether they invested early or late, based on the principal amount they have outstanding. So no, there is no separate rule for investors based on the timing of when they invested. There's a question about who should you contact if there's a discrepancy. If there's a discrepancy, the best thing for you to do is to put together an email to me laying out how much you invested, how much you received back, any rollover bonuses you received, and attaching documents in terms of that. That'll really streamline the process for me to go through and confirm with our records. If you just send me an email or give me a call saying that we're off by $3,000, it doesn't give me much to go with. So it's really helpful if you lay things out in an email, you know, where we disagree. So if you looked at the investor schedule and you agree with the original principal amount and you agree with the additional reductions, you just don't agree with the pre-petition distributions, you know, tell me that in your email, and that'll make it much faster and easier for us to get back to you with a response.
All right. I think that's generally about it. Everything's pretty much close to repeat questions. And I really appreciate it. I think that's been exactly an hour. We're trying to keep these efficient to respect your time and also the fact that there are professionals on here and we don't want to make this too expensive. So I think that I hope we've answered all your questions. We've attempted to cover the best we could the issues that have been pending. You look at the docket, follow Omni. We encourage you to do so. You will see some very interesting filings coming in the next 30 days or so. Read them. Don't hesitate to email us if you have questions about what you've read. We're here to try to get the best we can a recovery for you. The trustee is doing everything he can to get that recovery, as is his professionals, as are his professionals and the CEO and the company on the real estate. So thank you all. Matthew, any closing statements?
Thanks, Lewis. I did just want to thank you and your team for your help on this meeting. I think this was very instructive. and also the Alvarez folks and Ken over at Eisner, who's handling the tax stuff, and Rick and Tommy. Thank you guys all for making yourself available into the evening. As the investors know, under the plan and trust documents, we're going to be continuing to do these town halls periodically. And as posted on that website, the next one is scheduled for Tuesday, December 12th at 5 p.m. Eastern. So we look forward to seeing you guys again on that meeting. Thank you, everybody, for dialing in.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.